Hello, and welcome to This Day in History, where we talk about herstory, not history. We're your host, Taylor.
And Emily.
Okay, Emily. This day in history is.
So, Taylor, Julia Child was born in 1912.
I know that. It's not
Oh,
her birthday.
okay.
It's not her birthday. Hold
Oh, okay.
on. So, Emily, today's episode is all about November 3rd, 1948. Now, tell us a little bit about what was going on in 1948 to recap.
All right, 1948. The president was Harry Truman. The king of England was George VI, who is Elizabeth II's dad. Burma gained independence from the UK. It was the 1948 Summer Olympics in London. And Ina Garten, who is a chef, was born. I don't know why I thought of that. I don't know. Why that should matter.
What could that? On November 3rd, 1948, Julia Child ate her first meal in France, and it changed the culinary world.
Oh, okay.
So, I guess first I should ask you, Emily, what do you know about Julia Child? I know I've talked about her a lot in the past, so I know you're familiar.
So I know that she was a chef, but she wasn't a chef right off the bat. She was a chef later in life and kind of started experiencing and or experimenting with different kinds of food. She was very tall. She had a very distinct voice.
Can you do an accent? Please save the goblets. That's all I can do. I don't know any other quotes.
When you're making an omelet, shake the pan and pull the egg towards one side. I don't know.
If you make a mistake, just continue. Who's to see you're alone in the. I don't know. I can't do it.
That's pretty good. She was a chef. She was tall. She had a very high voice. She was a pretty cool lady.
We'll learn more about her during this episode. So Julia was born Julia Carolyn McWilliams in on August 15th, 1912, in Pasadena, California, and she's most well known for bringing French cuisine to the American public. And today we're going to talk all about her. She did not come from a background that involved a lot of cooking. She, as a kid, did not grow up cooking. She didn't really watch her mom cook. This wasn't part of her life. Food wasn't super important during when she was growing up. And so when you think about her now, she's all about food. Well, she was not
Right.
always like that.
What was she like?
Well, so she was very tall. She was 6'2", and she was really outgoing, really friendly. People liked her a lot. She was kind of considered not very serious. She did have a high-pitched voice, or kind of an interesting sounding voice at least. And she was in like a at very least like an upper middle class family. She went to Smith College. It was her mother's alma mater. Can you guess what her major was?
Her major, let's see, it's something unexpected, probably. Her major was history.
Yeah. Did you actually know that?
Oh, no, I was just
Yeah.
guessing. Is that right?
Yeah, I was right.
Heck
Oh,
yeah.
good job. So she graduated in 1934. So a lot of times back then and then later than that, a lot of women went to college for that MRS degree. They're looking for a husband. And that did not
Right.
really happen to her. I don't think she was someone who really fit in. She was this really tall woman. She was a little bit, I might describe her a little bit dorky, but like in a good, I'm also dorky, so I'm not making fun of her at all. So she graduated. She did not have like a clear thing in mind what she wanted to do. She wasn't like super ambitious for a certain goal in life, and she was not married. It was very unclear when she graduated college what she was gonna end up doing. She was well liked. She was outgoing. She was fun loving and not very serious. She went back to Pasadena for about a year. Did not have much direction. Kind of lived a socialite lifestyle, And then she did eventually go up to the East Coast to work as a secretary in New York City at a furnishing company. Again, she wasn't like super focused in her life. And so there's a point where she was like, well, what am I going to do with my life? Well, then what a big major historical event happened?
World War II.
Yes. World War II started, and she wanted to volunteer and join the war effort. And there were a few different areas that she tried to join, but she was too tall. This is weird. So she tried to join the Women's Army Corps and then the US Navy Waves. So there's like organizations within the Army and then the Navy. But she was not qualified for either of these two organizations simply because she was too tall. I don't know if they didn't have like the right skirts, like she just didn't fit the outfits. Like I don't know why that was the case, but she wasn't qualified because of her height. It's weird. I know, I don't understand
They
that.
couldn't make a longer skirt.
You would think it would be like the more so if you were too short, because maybe you had to like use equipment, you know, or something like that. But I don't know how. Anyway, it's strange. So instead, she joined the Office of Strategic Services. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So this is an organization, or it was an organization, the OSS, and it's actually the precursor to the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. At first, she was stationed in Washington, D.C. for General Donovan, who was the leader of OSS, and then she was stationed to work with the Emergency Sea Rescue Equipment Section, which is kind of a long term. But basically, in this section, she helped develop a shark repellent because they were using explosives in the water to target things like German U-boats. And then I guess sharks would think, oh, this is kind of cool. And they would like bite it or something, or like knock into it at the very least, and it would set it off. But it wasn't the right target. It was just like a helpless little shark. Her section was there. They were trying to figure out how to repel the sharks so that they would stay there for the targets that they actually wanted to hit.
What's in a shark repellent, I wonder?
They made maybe the smell of a predator? I have no idea. We should probably look this recipe up and see if we can find it. In 1944, so this is like, I guess, coming up to the end side of the war, she was sent over to Ceylon, which is modern day Sri Lanka, and then China. So here she was the chief of the OSS registry. So she had top security clearance. Now, she was not a spy, even though that would be very cool for this episode, but she was definitely in the know, right? Like she wasn't a spy, but she knew what all the spies were doing. So she had all the good dirt, I guess. That's what she was doing overseas. And I think she kind of saw this as an adventure. I saw a picture of her like in the barracks. And this is where she met one Paul Child. Well, who was born in January of 1902?
Hold on. Wikipedia says shark repellents. There's different kinds. There's magnetic shark repellent, electropositive shark repellent, electrical repellent, semiochemicals.
So, a semiochemical, it's just a chemical that two species, like different species, use to communicate.
I don't know. To tell you the truth, I still don't understand what exactly repels a shark. Thanks, Julia.
Yeah, wasn't that's not in her book. Why is her shark repellent not in her cookbook?
Yeah, seriously.
The major flaw. So, over in Asia, she met Paul Child, who was about 10 years older than her, and he was considerably shorter than her too. There's some photos where you can really see their height difference. And he was assigned to the visual presentation division, which was in charge of designing like a secret war room for a certain, I believe, general or something along those lines. At first, Paul was not super into Julia. Not love at first sight. I read it described as like a My Fair Lady kind of situation. While stationed in Asia, they would spend a lot of time together. They both really wanted to explore, and they both really liked the local cuisine. Julia was definitely an adventurer, and I think Paul was as well. And so they had that in common, and they would go around and like try all the different foods because not everyone there wanted to eat like the Chinese food that they had great access to. And so they were both like, "Yeah, let's do it." And slowly, Julia really grew on Paul, and then he kind of realized, oh, like she's the one. Like it wasn't right away, but it was definitely a love match in the end. I would describe this in my if you're let's see if you're on the fanfic side of the world. Definitely a bit of a slow burn.
Yeah, I'm currently watching a documentary about Julia Child, and they're showing some pictures of him and some letters back and forth, and they seemed very much into eating and like experiencing the different cultures and traveling, and especially when it comes to France. But I don't want to, give anything away.
Eventually, the war ended, obviously, and they moved back to the US and they realized they wanted to be together. They were in love. So they got married in September of 1946 in Lumberville, Pennsylvania. But there is a photo of them, or a couple of photos of them at their wedding, and they have like all these bandages on them because the night before they got in like some kind of accident, like a car fender bender, and so she's like a big thick bandage on her head. But the show must go on. They still got married, and they're definitely, you could describe them as best friends is what it I would heard them described as. So they were definitely very much a love match. So Paul got assigned a position in Paris, France. They were going to move together to France, and she had never been there. Julia had been over like over eight all over Asia in these countries that I've never been to, but moving to France, like that was she was nervous because she didn't think she was going to fit in. Like she's kind of a dorky person. She didn't speak French yet. She was afraid that the French would be snobby, and so she was like really nervous. Now Paul, on the other hand, I think he had already, I want to say he'd already lived in Paris, but he definitely spoke French very fluently. He loved Paris, so he was very familiar. So at least one of them knew, like, wasn't too nervous, because it would be scary to move to a new country. They got to France on November 3rd, 1948, which is the episode for today. This or the date for this episode, and they stopped in the city of Rouen, which is in the Normandy region of France, and it's like this little really cute little town that you could actually take a train to. And this is where Julia had her very first French meal ever, at least in France. Yes, at La Couronne, which I'm sure I'm butchering, but it means like the crown. It's a really old restaurant in Rouen. It was built in 1345. So it was a very, very old restaurant. And when she got there, she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous. But this is her lunch meal that she described this as the best meal of her life. So the meal consisted of half a dozen oysters on the half shell, so raw oysters, and it was served with pale rye bread and unsalted butter. Now, I don't know if listeners have been or live in France, but there's some great butter in France, right, Emily? So I'm sure this butter was great.
It butter have been.
I'm gonna leave that in here just to make a point. And then came with sole meunière, which is fish, and it's arrived whole, and it was perfectly browned in sputtering butter sauce, and a green salad with a lightly acidic vinaigrette. Her very first baguette, which I bet was amazing. And then a dessert, instead of white cheese and coffee, that's what it said, fromage blanc and coffee. So I'm assuming it's some kind of white cheese. And then wine. And she was like, oh my God, wine at lunchtime? Like she was shocked and very excited. She described this as the most exciting meal of her entire life. And she actually had it a second time when they went on a trip home and came back. And it was just as good the second time. It definitely changed her life, and this put her on the course to her life devoted to French food and teaching the American public about French food. So this meal changed the culinary world.
So how old was she then?
She was like 36 years old. A couple of years ago, our family went to Paris on this great vacation. For one of the days, our mother and I, so mom and I went to Rouen, and then Emily and our dad went to Normandy, the D-Day beaches of Normandy. So mom and I went to this restaurant. We also went there because this town is also where Joan of Arc died. So I wanted to see something about Joan of Arc. But we also had lunch, and I had this exact meal pretty much that Julia had. And it was very good. The half dozen oysters were a lot, but they were very tasty. It came with bread. It had like a sauce that had like garlic in it. So it's kind of garlicky, like bread and the oyster too. The fish was really, really good. Very good fish. And the green salad was nice and refreshing. My dessert was different though. I had a souffle. It was like a, I think it was peach, and it was actually really good. So I think the change out for that dessert was probably for the best. And I didn't have wine. Instead, I had cider because Normandy's known for its ciders.
Right.
Mom and I, we had planned out this whole day, and it was all about the dates, like the when the we got there right when the restaurant opened, and then we had already bought our ticket there and back. So our ticket, we like, oh shit, like we're so close to our departure time for our train. And so it was dessert time, and we were like, we asked the waiter if, oh, like, can you speed up a little bit? And he did the opposite and went very slow, it felt like. So it didn't work. So we should have just known and not bought our tickets so close together. Anyway, you can go to this restaurant. It is still in existence, and it has Julia Child's meal as an option for a set meal that you can purchase. Because I'm sure they get lots of visitors because of Julia Child. I
Right.
mean, she's very famous. And so you can go there and order this exact meal. And that's what I did. Mom got something different so we could, have a bit of a change. But it was very fun. And there's even a picture, a big picture of her in the restaurant. And it was not planned, but the waiter sat us directly below her photo. It
Aww.
was very cute. It was like perfect. And we were the very first ones in the restaurant, pretty much.
They probably knew. They're like, okay,
But
they're here for Julie Child, yeah.
this girl is obviously obsessed with Julia. We should put her underneath the photo. It was described as Julia's most exciting meal, and I found it very exciting as well. It was very fun. Now, and when she got there, she was all afraid that they would look down at her, but they were very friendly, the French were, and she was very happy about this. So
So what was the best part of the meal?
I think the best part of the meal must have been the fish. It was really light and buttery, and they bring it out to you before, and then they'll like take it back and they'll take out all the bones. I don't know the word for that, but I'm sure there's a word for it that sounds fancy. I think the dessert was very nice as well. It was just a really fancy restaurant. Like you could tell it was high end. I definitely didn't dress fancy enough. I didn't realize that until I got in there. So hopefully they weren't too offended by that. You probably see lots of people in there.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be traveled by many, so hopefully they didn't care too much. I made the reservation online. It's probably a good idea if you ever were to go to get a reservation just to make sure. I would imagine they're always busy.
If you have social anxiety, you can make a reservation online, even though it's a very, very old restaurant. Good to know.
And you can easily walk there from the train station. That's what we did. You can go by train from Paris to Rouen. You can walk to the restaurant. It's really pretty on the outside. It's a really cute town. So it's a nice little day trip from Paris if you happen to be going and you like Julia Child. Okay. Fast forward 1 year. She's been living in France with her husband. She's loving it. But she's like, what am I going to do with my life? What should I be doing? And so she decides to enroll in the Le Cordon Bleu cooking school. Have you heard of that?
Le cordon bleu, of course.
Le cordon bleu? Please don't be offended. Please be wrong.
What do you mean? Our French is perfect.
Perfect French speakers. When she got there, it was in October of 1949, and she realized that she had signed up for the wrong course. It was a year-long course, but it was like a beginner's class. And what she was really interested in was like, how to cook. Like very, French food that was more, not just the basics. And so she went to the owner of the cooking school, Madame Brassat, who Julia said did not like her. And there was a different course that was intensive, an intensive 6-week course for experts. The Madame Brassat said that she would not be good at it. And so instead, she enrolled in a year-long course that was for professional restaurateurs.
Wow.
She said that Madame Brossard said that Americans cannot cook. Rude. Someone did not like Americans, apparently. And she did not like Julia, is what she made it very clear as well. And this course was made up of almost a dozen former GIs that were on like the GI Bill. And so it was her and like almost a dozen men that were in this class for a whole year. And she would have been about 37 at this point. So, Emily, how do you feel about being if you were to turn 37 and you went back to school? I guess only for a year, though, so it wouldn't be terrible.
It would depend.
What if it was a cooking school?
I mean, 1 year is not that bad.
I guess it'd be on like a topic you are like interested in.
Yeah, and also it's in France, which would be really cool to be like, oh yeah, I'm doing school in France. La-di-da. I think it would be, yeah, that would be pretty fun.
Maybe we
Definitely.
should both just move to France, move to Paris, and go to cooking school. Okay, so whenever she was enrolled, this was Julia's schedule. So she was up and at him at 6:30. She would dress
Whoa.
very quickly. Her husband would still be asleep, and then she would drink a can of tomato juice.
Ugh.
That's weird, right?
Wait, hold on. Like, I'm thinking like tomato
V8?
paste.
I think it's
Yeah,
like V8.
if it's V8, that's fine. I love V8. I was thinking like Rotel juice or something.
I don't know if they had V8, but it must be like V8. I'm assuming. You know, it's like apple juice, but to tomatoes.
Yeah.
So she would drink like some her V8, and she would walk 7 blocks to get their car. And they are the kind of couple who name their cars, so it was called the Blue Flash. They go get Blue Flash, which I think is cute. She would go get the car and go buy a couple of newspapers, one in English and one in French. Go to a cafe and get some coffee and croissants and eat her breakfast and read the newspaper. And then by 7:20, she would walk the 2 blocks to the school. And by 7:30, the teacher would arrive and they would cook away, like just, you know, doing all chopping and dicing and boiling water and blah, 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 until about 9:30. So 2 hours. The school would get out by 9:45 and she would go shop and go home and practice what she had just done until about 12:30 when Paul gets home for lunch. And they would hang out and eat lunch and talk. And then in the afternoon, the Cordon Bleu would have like a demonstration class around 2:30. It would have like visiting chefs and they would explain to how to cook the various meals. And I guess anyone, you could like pay money to come and listen to these talks. So it was open, I believe, than more than just the class that she was in. So she would go listen, and then a lot of times she would go get the food, like the ingredients, and come home and then recreate the food. That was her average day from 6 a.m., 6:30 to getting home or getting done with the demonstration by 5.
Sounds pretty nice.
I wonder if she ate all the food that she was, you know, when she would practice, did her and, her and Paul then eat it? It must, I mean, I doubt she would waste
Yeah,
it.
I mean, I bet they would eat it, and then like if they have leftovers, I bet they give it to some neighbors and
She wrote in her book that after a few weeks in, she realized how much she didn't know. Because you know when you're learning about a topic and then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I don't know. So there's so much I don't know. And so she realized that. And she realized if she had taken that initial six week course, that was that really intensive one, that she would have gotten out and thought she knew a lot, but really she didn't know a lot. And so she was thankful that she was in the year long class. This is a letter that her husband Paul wrote to his twin named Charlie. Ready? The sight of Julia in front of her stove, full of boiling, frying, and simmering foods, had the same fascination for me as watching a kettle drummer at the symphony. Imagine it's this with your mind's eye: Julie with a blue denim apron on, a dish towel stuck under her belt, a spoon in each hand, stirring 2 pots at the same time. Warning bells are sounding off like signals from a podium, and a garlic-flavored steam fills the air with an odorous leitmotif. The oven door opens and shuts so fast you can hardly notice the deft thrust of a spoon as she dips it into the casserole and up to her mouth for a taste check, like a perfectly timed double beat on the drums. She stands there surrounded by a battery of instruments with an air of authority and confidence. She's becoming an expert plucker, skinner, and boner. It's a wonderful sight to see her pulling out all the guts of a chicken through a tiny hole in its neck, then from the same orifice, loosening the skin from the flesh in order to put it in an array of leopard spots made of truffles. Or to watch her remove all the bones from a goose without tearing the skin. You ought to see her skin a wild hare. You'd swear she'd just been coming around the mountain with her Bowie knife in hand.
Jeez Louise.
I think that Paul was very much good at describe, you know,
Imagery.
yeah, he's very good at imagery, clearly, more than I am.
I mean, because if I was cooking and someone was, describing me, they'd be like, "Oh my gosh, chaos everywhere." But no, like he made it sound very
Beautiful.
majestic. Yeah, very beautiful, very majestic.
What I like about it is that, you know, in the beginning, when she was still in college or just out of college, she didn't really have a direction. I don't think she had like a ton of passion about one particular thing. And, you know, at least for like a career wise, you can tell by her daily devotion to school and what Paul writes is that she was loving what she was doing, clearly, right? Like she must have loved to cook if she was that intense in the
Right.
kitchen. That would have been fun to watch too.
Absolutely.
At one point, Julia was diagnosed with a liver attack. Apparently, this is also called an American stomach in Paris. Now, is a liver attack like a real modern? Is that a modern term, or is there something else you would call that?
What? Liver attack? Do they mean? They must mean pancreatitis. Hold on.
Oh, maybe.
Let me Google it.
Like a stomach ache is kind of how it was described. And it wouldn't really go away. And then eventually they had to put it on like a bland diet.
So Google is not helping me, but I'm guessing maybe she had like pancreatitis or a gallstone or something. If you have a stone in your gallbladder, then it's usually more painful after you eat a very rich meal, where you're putting out more bile.
Apparently, she was having these stomach pains, and at first she thought, oh, I might be pregnant. And she was kind of excited, but it turned out obviously not to be the case. Her and Paul did not have any children. And I wonder, I'm not really sure what kind of medicine they had back then. So I'm not sure if they would have had Pepto-Bismol to make her stomach feel better. But they put her on an antidiarrheal treatment, and they restricted her diet, which she said was no fun. Can you imagine being in Paris and being like on a restricted diet? That would suck.
Absolutely. I'm still googling liver attack. American stomach in Paris, Julia Child.
At last, it was time for her to take her final exam. It had been a whole year, and Madame Brissot was dragging her feet on scheduling the test, and she kind of complained to her teacher to get her to like hurry the F up, give me the test. And part of it was she was given a card, and it had the recipe. It was like several recipes. I think it was meant for like a whole meal. And then she had to write out the ingredients. Which seems simple enough, right? Like surely she can do this. Except she didn't know the recipes. She did not remember these recipes, and she was like, "Fuck!" And she kind of made them up. She knew she was she's she knew that she was gonna fail this test, which was a big bummer. After she did this, you know, she already failed. She looked up these recipes. She went and bought the ingredients, and she made it. And then she ate it really fast. And this sounds like she did it out of spite, like she was a you know, hate eating the food that she couldn't remember how to cook. But she did finally get her diploma in 1951 after taking the test one more time. So like she would have been, I'm guessing, about 37, 38.
Good for her for trying something different and finding her passion in life and really working hard at it. And some, you know what? Sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. So I'm glad that she made it, even though she kind of like got nervous during her test,
So even someone as talented as Julia failed, but then she went back and took a test again. Like she was like, yeah, I'll just do it again, whatever, you know. And like what? Like she still has her diploma, and she still became this amazing chef, or you know.
It didn't make her less of a person.
Right. So next, in November of 1951, she w met one Simon Beck, also called Simca, and they met at this luncheon thing. Where they would all like it was I think it was just women, but it was like a group of people, and they would come and like eat food. It was like, you know, they would like, I don't know, kind of like a book club but with food or something like that. And she met Simca, and they hit it off right away, you know, talking about food, obviously. And through Simca, she met Louisette Bertholle. Yeah, that's right. So Simca and Louisette have been working on a cookbook. That sounds familiar. And it was a cookbook of French recipes that was going to be published in the US. They were not having very good luck with it getting published. Apparently, they were told they should get an American who was crazy about French cooking to help them. Now, who could that possibly be? Maybe Julia Child. Meanwhile, the next year, the three of them started their own little cooking school, and they were teaching Americans in France how to cook food, French food. They charged $20 for the first three lessons. And apparently, at one point, one of the people kind of dissed wine, particularly red wine. And they're like, oh, I don't want to drink it if it's like a red wine. And Paul, her husband, who was like, all about the wine, was like, no, ma'am, that is not correct. And so he taught one of the classes all about wine, and got a few converters. So that does sound like Paul. It was basically the school of the three hearty eaters.
L'école des trois gourmands.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna try it. That was too good. Much better than I could do. Paul's position in Paris was not a permanent one. It ended, and she was pretty sad. And they got transferred out to Marseille. Even though she was pretty devastated that she was leaving beautiful Paris, it did give her a chance to be exposed to other types of French cooking because the type of food that you saw in southern France could be very different than areas in Paris. Just like food in Normandy is very different than what you get in Paris a lot of times.
Right.
And she first read the manuscript for the cookbook that Simca and Louisette started in September of 1952, but really it was just a jumble of all these recipes, and so she had to basically rewrite it to be eligible. Even though like it was in English, she had to make sure that people in America could read it, and that includes things like making sure that ingredients that not all ingredients that they use in France were available in America. Things like creme fraiche or something like that, which nowadays you might find easily, but back in the 50s,
Right.
like in the early 50s, maybe you couldn't find that. Or things like converting measurements. You know, they were on the metric system, but we're not on the metric system, unfortunately. And so
Right.
she had to deal with that. And she worked on this with Simca and Louisiette for 9 years. Almost a whole decade of her life was dedicated to rewriting this cookbook. Now, can you imagine that? Writing a book for 9 years.
That's a really long time. I don't think I would like to do that. No.
And a lot of this would involve her, you know, trying the recipes. So with her cooking all this food, which I hope they got to enjoy. Meanwhile, they were not always in France. Eventually, Paul got transferred to Germany and then over to Norway. And eventually they moved back to the States to Washington, D.C. And then they settled in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
How did they feel about that?
Well, I know that she didn't enjoy Germany quite as much, but mostly because she didn't get to appreciate the area she was in. She was kind of in like a bit of a suburb type area that was for Americans in Germany, and so she didn't get to like be in the locals of Germany, which I'm sure she would have enjoyed, but she didn't get to have that exposure like she did in Paris, I believe. Now, drum roll. In 1961, Mastering the Art of French Cooking was finally published. And at this point, she was 49 years old. So this was her like big accomplishment for her career, and she was almost 50 years old. And I just think that shows us that we might be afraid to leave our 20s, but there's so much more coming in our 50s, in our 30s, in our 40s, in our 50s, and so in our 60s also. So I like that, don't you think? So, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, you can still purchase today. And nowadays it has like Julia's name at the very top and then Simone and Louisiette's names is near the bottom. I think I was an undergrad, I think, when I asked for this book for Christmas. And it's a big book, it's heavy. We have a hard copy. And so, because I was a big fan of Julia and I wanted to have the cookbook. And somehow, I don't know how this happened, but our family started doing this thing where every year for Christmas, we would make a Julia Child meal. Emily, how have you enjoyed that?
No, I mean, it's fun. It's exciting to try something different.
It's memorable too.
It's a memorable. It usually involves a lot of butter and a lot of steps and sometimes frustration.
We started out making her a mousse, chocolate mousse. And when you make it, have the chocolate and you have it over the stove, and then you put it like in a bowl of ice. Well, we were like stirring it, and then we kept getting water in the bowl, and you add like a orange liqueur to it. So at the end, it was really thick and it tasted really good. It was like an orange flavored chocolate mousse, but it was so heavy because of the accidental water we got in the dish. So we knew it wasn't right, but like, what are you gonna do? We
But
can't redo it.
it tasted really, really good. Okay.
It did.
It was really delicious,
It was hard the
but
first time. And so the next year we did it again, and we had already done it once, so we knew the pitfalls. So we did it again, and it was really light and fluffy. It was so good.
yeah, but the flavor I think was better the first time, even though it was wrong.
It was so
Not
dense. I mean,
wrong.
they both were great. And so it kind of turned into somehow the whole meal would be from the Julia Child cookbook. And so we've done things like duck a l'orange. We've done,
Coupon.
we did the leg of lamb.
The peas. We did those like peas, those like butter peas.
We did ratatouille once. We did a risotto that was really good. The risotto is always good.
That was good.
We did like some kind of braised cucumbers, which were really good, but they also took a lot of work, and they were just cucumbers. I have made it this really good chocolate cake. I think it's coated with almonds. That's a really good dish. The beef bourguignon is also good. And we've done the hollandaise sauce. It's nice because the recipes on the main part of the page, it explains, okay, this is what you're going to do. And on the left side of the page, it says what you need for that individual step. That's how it's broken down. And you can go through, and it often will say, like, let's say you're looking at chicken. And so it'll say, like, this is how you cook chicken. And then, but after that recipe, it'll have like little variations you could change to make, oh, this is chicken with cream sauce. This is chicken with cream sauce and mushrooms. This is chicken with cream sauce and bacon. Like, it kind of gives you the base for that meal.
Right.
And then it lets you make little changes for what you want. We enjoy it. It's a lot of work. So be prepared. Make sure to read the recipe beforehand very clearly.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll read the recipe and she's like, "Oh, okay, next, throw in a large handful of almonds." And you're like, "What's a large handful?" Or like it's very like lofty or like very
Is.
descriptive instructions, and you're like, what do you mean?
One of them was like, the water should be simmering, so it's almost too hot for your finger to be in there, or something like that. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Like, so I think I
Yeah.
have to stick my finger in the water, and then if it doesn't hurt too much, then it's ready. Like, what? Like, it's silly. Some interesting instructions.
Yeah, so if you're someone who needs like very strict, okay, I'm following this rule, then this, it's maybe not the best one to follow, but you'll get the gist.
Yeah, you can find probably simplified versions of those meals online, and so you could always try those out first, maybe, and then work your way up to Julia. Every year we write the date, so like December 2022 or whatever, and then we say like our ratings. So we've written the book, what we all thought about it. Anyway, that's pretty fun. So she got her book published, and she was super happy. The next part, I don't, if y'all, any of y'all who are listening are in the field of publishing or writing books, you have to promote your book after you write it. And so she went on to a TV show, a local TV show called I've Been Reading. It was a show about like books, obviously. And she went on there to promote the cookbook, and she was really nervous. She was very new to TV. TV was new to begin with. It was like this brand new technology that was kind of like, oh, what's that? And so she really didn't want to make a fool of herself. And she decided, like, just to bring ingredients. And she was like, if I can't think of what to say after, if I run out of things before the time's up, I'm just gonna start cooking, which seems very on par to Julia. And so she brought ingredients, and she brought a hot plate, which is just funny, that idea that she brought in a hot plate into this place. And she just cooked an omelet right there on screen. And so afterwards, all of these people who were watching wrote in and saying they wanted to see more of that Julia Child lady. She was 50 years old when she started her TV show, The French Chef. This show was like a groundbreaking cooking show. It was the first of its kind. You think of now, like, I think of Rachel Ray for some reason, that was very much like telling you how to cook individual meals in a kitchen, but Julia did it first. And so, Julia walked so those other people could run. The pilot aired in July of 1962, and the first episode aired on February 11th, 1963. Emily, what did she cook on her first episode?
So, according to the internet, she made a French omelet, and I watched this on YouTube today. And she seemed low key nervous and kind of sweaty, but it's her first episode. Like, of course she's going to be nervous. And she talked about how to make the omelet and all the stuff and how to turn it properly and yeah. Because I know originally she was on the episode where she like pulled out the hot plate, but this is her first actual episode. Are you an omelet person?
I don't like eggs.
I'm not really an omelet person, so it didn't look that great. But the way she described it sounded good. It looked good.
You know what, though? Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's a typical French omelet. And if Julia Child made me a French omelet, I would sit there and eat it and say thank you.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it makes sense why you said that she looked nervous, because it was filmed live. So she had one shot at this. She didn't get to have all these retakes. And so it was like, you gotta do it. And she had to do it within the certain number of minutes. And so if she was under, she kind of had to, like, oh, drag it on a little bit. Like, oh, here's a tap dance, like make it pull it out longer so that it would fit the time slot. It was aired on WGBH in Boston, Massachusetts, public broadcasting. And her whole life, she was like really a big supporter of public broadcasting, and later on, like, donated a lot of money to it. I believe this station in particular, she really supported. Like you said, she would go in there and she would start cooking. Sometimes she would throw in different things. Like, I watched an episode and she explained how to sharpen your knives, which is like, that's kind of a nice little tip, because back then, I don't, who would have taught you how to do that? Unless you were a chef already, you might not even know that was necessary. And so she would give little tips like that. And so she would cook different parts. She would explain it, and then, she might say, like, you could do this early and you could put it in the fridge, or like, you can do this, but you can also do it with beef. And she would kind of explain the variation or how to make it a little bit different. One episode, she kind of explained, oh, like, if you bought this soup from a can, here's how you could make it better and make it seem like you made it from home. She did a lot of mainly it was recipes from her book, it was French food. You can watch episodes now on it on YouTube right now, which is really fun to see her on there. But let's talk about the name of the show itself. Now, it's funny that they called it The French Chef, because she was neither French, and she really actually wasn't a chef. Like, she was trained in cooking, but she was never a professional chef, and clearly she wasn't French. But the History Chicks podcast said that they called it that because it fit in the TV guide. It also apparently was one of the very first shows to have captions, which gave Americans who were hard of hearing or deaf access to her television show, which
Oh,
was a nice
really?
little addition that I didn't really think about until I read about it.
Taylor, did you know that Julia Child was a big advocate for Planned Parenthood?
I did not know that. That's cool.
She was, yeah.
Good
So
for her.
she was a big advocate, and it actually caused some backlash during her career.
Really?
But she was all about Planned Parenthood. And she also raised awareness around the AIDS epidemic. Which I didn't know about until today.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Also, at some point, I don't know the actual year, but she had breast cancer when she was, in the midst of filming in all those years, and she had a pretty radical mastectomy. She did not let that stop her, and that she wasn't very public about that. It was a pretty private matter, I believe. But, during all this filming, she was also dealing with that.
Yeah.
So she started her TV show when she was 50 years old, which again points out the fact that you can start so many things in life at any point that you want.
I know, I love her story because she was older than the average chef to get into this field, and she got a show. I really love her story, and I've watched Julie and Julia. I watched the HBO like TV show about her and all other things, and I really love her story, and I feel like she's unproblematic.
I do too. I'm a big fan of Julia. I have been for a long time. My family knows that, obviously. Emily did give me at one point one of the draw it's the illustrations of celebrities sitting on sandwiches. It's on my like bookshelf where I do my TikToks.
Yes, so here's celebsonsandwiches.com. It's 8 by 10-inch watercolor of Julia Child on a beef bourguignon sandwich with Mornay sauce.
It's really cute. So after The French Chef, several more TV shows. So Julia Child and Company, Julia Child and More Company, Dinner at Julia's, The Way to Cook, Cooking with Master Chefs, like all of these. She had a ton of other TV shows. She had all these books that she wrote. They did publish a second Mastering the Art of French Cooking Volume 2, which also took almost a decade to write. And I do not own that one. If you, anyone that's listening, happens to own it, please comment on my TikTok or something, or email us and tell us if it's worth buying. I had a few quotes that I wanted to read about her.
Yes,
Right.
these
So
quotes.
here are a few quotes that I wrote down that were from Julia. I was 32 when I started cooking. Up until then, I just ate. Cooking is like love. It should be entered into with abandon. Or not at all. Do it or don't do it. There is no try. So
Are you quoting Yoda?
yes. I think that Carrie Fisher would appreciate that joke, just so you know.
That's a call back to our last episode.
You should go listen to it. It was great. A party without a cake is really just a meeting. And isn't that the truth? I agree with that. Some kind of dessert or at least wine, you know, bring a cake. And then this is the last one that I wrote down. Find something you're passionate about and keep tremendously interested in it. You know, after her first TV show, she continued on this for several decades and became an incredibly accomplished chef. She would had several of her own TV shows. She would be guests on other TV shows and news and things like that. You can find clips about her all over the new all over YouTube. Unfortunately, her husband's health did start to decline, and he eventually, after he had several small strokes, and he did pass away eventually.
Yeah, I think he developed dementia.
Yeah, he after he had his series of small strokes, Paul, he wasn't really the man he used to be, and he just got he when she had to she didn't have him in a nursing home because I'm sure caring it just became too difficult to care for him. But she would bear, like every day in the nursing home, she would go visit him when she was in town, and then when she wasn't there, she would call him every day. She died of kidney failure in California on August 13th, 2004, and she was just 2 days shy of her 92nd birthday. Anyone that is listening that happens to be visiting Washington, D.C. in the time they're listening to this, you can go look at her kitchen from Cambridge that Paul helped design, and you it's really cute, and you can see all like the pots and pans on the wall that he put special spots for. You can see it on display at the Smithsonian's National Museum for American History. And I'm sure like we as a family have been there. We went to DC that 1 year. I didn't know who she was.
I remember, no, I remember like seeing the Julia Child kitchen and kind of
You
thinking,
do?
oh yeah, I remember seeing it. And being like, oh yeah, that was that chef, but I might have taken a picture of with my digital camera.
Oh, dig through all your photos.
Yeah.
She was given the French Legion of Honor because she helped spread the French culture to the US through, you know, like through the cooking. And she was awarded the US Presidential Medal of Honor. So she got these great honors from both France and the US. She was given several honorary doctorates from like four different universities, I believe. And she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame.
She is just very non-judgmental when it comes to cooking and like just very open, and you watch her and you're like, oh, okay, I can do that. Like, yeah, like she doesn't make you feel like stupid if you don't understand what she's doing or why she's doing something.
That's a great point. I actually love that because there is a episode on the French Chef, and I believe it's on YouTube, where she makes like a little mistake. I think she is like a potato dish, and she tries to flip it, and she kind of fails. And she's like, "Well, I didn't have the courage, but just put it back together and stick it in the oven. No one's gonna know the difference." Like, she was very much like, obviously Julia was a great chef, and she made
Yeah,
mistakes too. And so if you're
right.
cooking and you make a mistake, just make it work and don't tell anybody and just serve it and like whatever. You can go on YouTube. I really recommend going on YouTube and watching The French Chef because it's actually really fun. It's like it's a cute cooking show, and they have like the music is very adorable. And so
Also, listeners, you can watch Julia Child on YouTube, and it says Julia Child on PBS, which, as you know, she loves public television, so she's still on PBS on YouTube.
that's true. Yes. And I believe that she's on like a, there might be a PBS streaming app or something along those lines. And I think those episodes are also on there.
Yeah.
YouTube or my Instagram video. Now, there's TV shows about her. There's Julie and Julia, which is the movie made. I'm not sure what year, but it's all about Julia's life and also someone named Julie Powell, who spent a year trying every single recipe in her book. And it's a really cute book, and it has Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci in it as Paul and Julia Child. They're so good as the couple, honestly. I think
Yes.
they're so great. And there's a TV show on HBO Max, or no, Max, formerly known as HBO Max, I should say, and called Julia. And it has so far two seasons, and it's nice because it's about their life after the book is published and right when she starts the TV show. And so it's her life after France, and she's getting used to, like, she's on this journey to start this TV show, and it's kind of scary. At first, Paul is like not very supportive, but then he gets really gung-ho in it. And there is also a documentary called, I believe, Julia is what it's called. And it's all about her life.
Yes, I had the Julia documentary playing during this podcast on mute, and it was a very good, succinct summary of her life and some good throwback videos and especially some letters from Paul to her. And I love Julie and Julia. And then I love, yeah, the show on HBO is so good. Maybe I should just move to France and eat a bunch of food, and I'll find my passion in life and have a new career. I love her. I feel like she, yeah, her not knowing really what her passion was in life until later on was encouraging, and just goes to show that your life doesn't end when you're in your 20s or 30s. I love that. Like, she's very inspirational. And she loves butter. I mean, like, she loves to eat. She loves to eat. She loves butter. She loves wine. Like, she sounds like a pretty cool lady. I would have loved to meet her. And
Well, Emily, if you decide to suddenly move to France and go to cooking school, I will fully support you, just so you know, and I'll make sure to visit you so that you have lots of encouragement and someone to practice cooking with.
well, don't worry, because as you know, Taylor, but listeners, you may not know this. Taylor, you may know this, but listeners, you may not know this, but I will be at the Olympics this July in Paris. So I'll try to pick up on some good French cuisine, and maybe I'll go to that restaurant that she went to if I have time, but
Well, listeners, please let us know if our episode encouraged you to do your own Julia Child Christmas dinner and let us know how it went. Hopefully not too bad.
Just don't get the water into the mousse when you cook it, because it'll be very, very dense and
It'll still
everyone will,
taste good, though.
it'll taste good. People will complain and then
We'll
you'll have to
never
make it
forget it.
and I'll never forget. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our podcast about Julia Child, and more importantly,
Bon
bon
appetit!
appetit.